now we're into the talk of Nikki. Nikki is a software developer doing game design, procedural game generations, and it says she originally made one of the world's first game randomizers back in 95 when they were playing Doom 2. When I first heard about game randomizers, I thought, is that the thing where you put in your dice and it shakes your dice so you get better dice, better random numbers out of your dice? But I think it's something else. And she's going to tell us, embrace chaos, how game randomizers work. Take it away.
So yes, welcome to Embrace Chaos, How Game Randomizers Work. So who am I? You already heard a little bit. I'm Nikki or Nicolette or Strawberry, depending on some context. I'm the creator and main developer of HMS Jane, which is a randomizer for Final Fantasy I, the Game Boy Advance version. Before I created that randomizer, I contributed to the Final Fantasy randomizer, which is for the NES version of the game. And as he said, I created a Doom 2 randomizer back in the 90s when my friends and I were playing Deathmatch and we wanted to like have new experiences each time without knowing where all the items were. Spoiler warning, I'm going to give light spoilers on a game that's like 10, oh, 20 something years old. Just FYI. So yes, what is a randomizer? A randomizer is not the RNG, but a randomizer is a game modification or a ROM hack. And though both game randomizers and RNG use a seed, because when you make a game randomizer, you want to have it so that people can create the same random version of the game each time. And so each instance of the game is usually called a seed. And so why would you want to play a randomizer? Well, if you have a game that has a lot of exploration, you get a renewed sense of discovery because things are in different places. You can even have a completely new overworld generated. You might want to adapt to things on the fly, like you might get an ability at a different time, and so it allows you to approach different challenges at different times. You might want to play randomizer just for the challenge, like to make bosses much more powerful, or to take extra content bosses and move them into the regular game so you have to fight them. And another really great reason is for racing. Like speedrunning is really fun, but like it's very, very technical, and there's usually a very precise route that you have to go through. When you're playing a randomizer, you don't really know what the route is going to be. So if you have people that have similar knowledge about the game without having that experience doing the same one every time, they can be on pretty equal footing. So, Final Fantasy. Final Fantasy is a series of role-playing games that was developed by Square and Square Enix that were incredibly inspired by D&D. In fact, whenever something weird happens in the original Final Fantasy, it's usually because that's the way that they did it in D&D. In this game, you play as four adventurers who become known as the Warriors of Light, and you are on a quest to restore the world, like to save the world from darkness. So why would I want to create a randomizer? Like what inspired me to do this? Well, I was playing this game called Final Fantasy IV Free Enterprise. And Free Enterprise is an open world randomizer for Final Fantasy IV. And you start the game with this airship, the Enterprise. And I really, really enjoyed playing this game, and so I wanted to help. It has great core gameplay. Getting the Enterprise at the beginning allows you to fly to so many different areas and approach different bosses and pick up different characters in an order that you wouldn't normally do during the game. It has a great community. They're very, very welcoming for newcomers. They have special seeds that they run every week that are tuned for people who are new to the game, and so you get to play them, and then people who are experienced with the game will also play them, record their runs, and then share them, so then you can watch how, like, after you do it, you can watch how an expert plays it, and you can see, like, oh, I did this, but if I had done this other thing, it would have worked out better. And just fond memories of the game. Like, Rydia, this character, is one of my favorite in all of the Final Fantasy games. There was only one tiny problem with this. It was closed source. The developers had a very strict, a very firm vision of what they wanted the game to be, which, you know, is one of the reasons why it's really great. And so I wasn't able to contribute. But I think it ended up for the better, because then I thought, okay, well, what if I take some of the elements that I really enjoyed from Final Fantasy IV, from Free Enterprise, and Final Fantasy I, which I really enjoy playing, and brought them together and created a new randomizer using, instead of the NES version, the GBA version. So that's what I ended up creating, HMS Jane. It's a randomizer for the GBA version for Dawn of Souls. If you've played the game before, you might get the name reference. If you haven't, the ship is named after the Queen of Cornelia. At this point, it's here's the idea. How do you go about actually randomizing things? Okay, so like I said, Final Fantasy is very, very similar to D&D. And so in D&D, you have the Dungeon Master's Guide, you have the Monster Manual, and that sort of thing. And these all have tables like this that have stats in them about what the classes are like, how the levels work, what monsters are there, what formations the monsters arrive in, and that sort of thing. And in Final Fantasy, in video games, there are tables just like this. So if you go around and you randomize some of these values, you can get some really, really wild results. Sometimes you have to figure out where these tables are yourself, but luckily there was some people who went and found all of these things for other ROM hacks, so I was just able to get right to it. So, now that we have these tables, how can we randomize it? So first, we can leave it the same. We can play vanilla, as they say. And you might say, that's a little weird to do for a randomizer, not randomizing. But randomizers also typically include a bunch of quality of life features that the original games don't have. And so some people want to play the randomizer to get the quality of life improvements, but they want to play the original game. So being able to do that is a really nice feature to do. You can shuffle things. Shuffling is just like you would do with cards. So every time you shuffle a deck of cards, you're always going to get the same cards, just in a different order. You're never going to suddenly get two Queen of Hearts. You can do that with items and treasure and that sort of thing in the game. Everything that's in the original game is still there, just in a different place. And this can be neat because it really rewards people who know the game well. Because if you pop into the magic shop in the second town and you find here's, Nuke, the most powerful magic in the game, you don't really need to check any more magic shops anymore because you already have the best. The last way to do it is you can use randomness, and that can be either truly random, where you just pick a random number and pop that thing into its place, which can be exciting. But I tend to like these weighted random numbers, because then it allows you to get this game where it's random, but it feels like it was designed. And the way that I do that in HMS Jane is very similar to the way that it's done in Free Enterprise, is that each of the regions of the world has a score of how valuable the things are. So like this is the area, the bottom middle area is where you start the game, and it's got the least amount of powerful armor and weapons and spells and that sort of thing. And then as you play the game, the weapons and armor get more powerful until you get to the end game, the last two dungeons, which have the most powerful things. This isn't to say that you might not find something really powerful in the first area, because it still is random. But it's just more likely to appear in the end areas. In fact, in the vanilla game, there is some interesting things going on. Like in the next to the last dungeon up here, there's a treasure chest that has a piece of armor called cloth armor, and it's the first armor that you can buy in the very first town that you visit, which is a bit weird, but so I guess it's fine. This is how you randomize things. This is how the data tables work. And if you want to, you can actually just stop right here. There are a ton of randomizers that just do this, like the Pokemon randomizer, because you start off and you get a random choice of starter Pokemon. You fight trainers who now have different random Pokemon. The Pokemon can learn random skills. You can even do things like randomize the evolutions or the type system if you want to really blow your mind. But like I said, I really like the idea of Free Enterprise and being able to play the game in a different way. And so to do that, I would need to change the progression of the game. So how does the progression work? So in the original game, you start off in this town called Cornelia, and you go and you're asked to rescue the princess. And so you go and you take this long, long series of things where you do so, so many fetch quests. and then you finally end up, you go to a bunch of dungeons, you like the four crystals, and then you restore peace to the world. It's amazing. And so these are the different places and people that you visit. And what I want to do is I want to take these people and move them around so that when you go to these places, you get something different. In order to do this, the data for how this works, though, isn't in these data table things. There are these scripts, and video games, especially RPGs, tend to have this scripting engine where you can have scripted events to tell you how things go. So in the original NES, there was very little dialogue, and there's only one actual sort of scripted event at the very, very end of the game. Here, when they recreated it for the WonderSwan Color, they added in all of these cutscenes where you would have dialogue and you could have sprites moving around. You would have the scripts would say which plot flags to check. So has the player seen this event? Have they killed this boss? And script commands to initiate battles like this. So how did this work? There are commands that are like this. They're pretty easy to understand. There's an opcode, a size, and parameters. And this is really awesome because, like, even if you don't know what the commands are, you can look at the second byte, see how many bytes the command is, and just skip to the next command, even if you don't know how it works. And then the scripting engine takes the opcode and the size and uses this to go into a jump table. And so this is what the script looks like for most of what the little video was that played. So if we want to change this, we want to randomize things and change how things are happening, we need to change these bytes. So one approach that we could do is we could just write some small patches, and because there's only probably a few commands we need to change, we could put those into a file, say change these things for these people, and then that'll be done. But I didn't think that that was quite flexible enough. And so I thought and I figured, okay, well, what is the most reasonable thing to do here? And the answer was obviously to create my own programming language. there's two parts to this, in fact. There's the first part that takes the ROM, and it takes these bytes, and it turns it into a script. And then there's another part that takes the script, and it converts it back into the bytes. And I called this an assembler, and a disassembler, and an assembler, and this would bite me later. I had an idea for a bunch of how a bunch of these commands worked, because there was this nice person who documented all of this stuff. And so I started with these commands, which are the commands that I really needed to do to understand to get the core things that I wanted to change. I wanted to be able to change what people said. I wanted to be able to set plot flags in different orders, check them in different places, set and remove triggers, and I wanted to be able to give and take key items. And then, because I didn't really need to understand all of the commands, I just added this command called db, which basically says, take these bytes and write them back into the ROM. And this worked pretty well, until I ran into the first event that was bigger in the randomizer than it was in the vanilla game. And then I had to learn how the flow control worked. So I found these different commands and how the flow control works. And I also ended up learning that the treasure chests are two pixels off of a tile alignment, and so I had to learn how to position things pixel perfect, otherwise it looked weird. So I had this, and then I had this thing that spit out things like this. So this is the vanilla version of when you walk of the map initialization script for this for Elf Castle. And so what it does is we're going to check to see if your people have the Mystic Key. If you do, then you obviously woke the prince up because he gave it to you, and you can remove the event. You can go and wake the prince up, change his model to be the woken up version, and then go to the end of the event. If you don't have the Mystic Key, then the prince is asleep still, and you check whether you have the Jolt Tonic to wake him up. If you don't, that's the end, nothing new more to do. If you do have it, then what you want to do is you want to set the event on the doctor to be the script that will wake the prince up when you give him the Jolt Tonic. And this is basically how all of the events sort of work, where everybody in the game has this very simple script that's typically like, say this dialogue, end. And then the map initialization scripts set different scripts on them to be to set up more complex events. In the randomizer, now we don't have the sleeping prince, we have a sleeping sword. So we can check to see if we have the Mystic Key, because we still need to unlock the vault if you have it. But if you have the Mystic Key or you don't have the Mystic Key, that doesn't necessarily mean that you've like woken up the prince, because the prince didn't get, like, might not have given you the mystic key. Like in this case, it's going to give you Excalibur. So you have to check, okay, if the vault is locked, now do I have the reward that the elf is going to give me? If I do, well, then you woke the prince up. You can make him awake and you can go to the end. Otherwise, you have to see if you have the jolt tonic to see if you're going to be able to wake up the prince. I decided to keep the items that you bring to the places the same, so that as soon as you get the jolt tonic or whatever other item, you know if you bring it there, you can finish that quest. And then you just get a different reward each time. And so the flag is automatically filled in by the randomizer, and then this is sort of what the reward scripts look like, the thing that it's setting on the doctor, and so these scripts tend to be very linear because the logic that's for all of the if then conditions is being handled in the map initialization, and so here we just have. Typically, it would just be give the reward, set the flag, that sort of thing. And because it's the randomizer, I have this little macro in there that says give Liu Kang reward. And so inside the randomizer, there's a table that says, if Bahamut, this person, is in there, this is the plot flag that he's going to set, this is the key item that he'll give you, and these are any extra commands that have to get run if you complete his quest. For Bahamut, you have to, when you complete his quest, he's going to promote the Warriors of Light from their unpromoted to their promoted version, and there's a special script command to do that. And so that's kept in there. And so you can see, so far, a lot of this has been very, very assembly-like. I started to rewrite the language to be a little bit easier to read, so that it was like an if and go to and that sort of thing. And it's not really necessary, but I have found a few bugs with it, with the old implementation, so I guess it's working out. That's still in progress, though. But yeah, it worked. I released it. It's on GitHub. It's open source. We tried it out with some racers, with Demarine and Leggy Starscream, who are ranked speedrunners of the GBA version of the game, and they ran through and everything worked really well. There's still some bugs. There's still more to do. There's a bunch of ideas that I have. So if you would like to help with this, please come and talk to me. If you don't, then like I said, it's open source. You can grab it and play it yourself. If this particular randomizer isn't really your cup of tea, there are other randomizers for the other Final Fantasy games, and Zelda, Pokemon, A Link to the Past is very, very popular. But it's not just like retro games. There's also randomizers for like Elden Ring and Hollow Knight. If you Google the big video game randomizer list, you'll find it. That was all I had. Thank you for listening, and hope you have a great why.
Thank you, Nikki. And yeah, I think if you want, we can have some more questions because the next slot is empty. And this already reminded me the next talk at 5 o'clock is about application specific languages. So it seems you already got into that territory.
How do you ensure that there are no soft locks? Like, how do you ensure that it is in fact possible to complete the game?
There's a huge topic about how to do this, and I cheated and I used a constraint solver.
So the constraint solver runs in the randomizer software? And
yeah, there's that. I have an answer set program that's part of the randomizer that just says, these are all the items, these are all the people, these are what locks what. And then I just say, here's a seed, give me a solution for it. And, and because it's seeded, it gives the same answer each time, even though there's multiple answers.
Wow. Any more questions?
Just in a practical detail, so how do you actually use it? You have a dump of ROM, you modify the dump of ROM and you run it on the emulator, or you're actually running the hardware by reflex cartridge?
So it writes out a new ROM, and then you can, like, I mean, in theory, I think you could burn it into like an EEPROM or something like that. You can definitely play it on a real GBA with a flash cart. When I'm doing development, I typically end up using an emulator just because it's easier to really quickly load it. But yeah, it works on the hardware as well.
Thanks. So yeah, another round of applause for Nikki.